scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, to left corner to Aguila. Aguila in the left circle. Passing to Yale, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get it going this hour on the program. Welcome to Flames Talk on this Friday, February 21st. Pat Steinberg along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio, and we welcome you to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to calgarylockandsafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's a Friday on Flames Talk, which means it's also time for Eric Francis Fridays. Eric joins us now from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Hello, Mr. Francis.
We can all exhale, my friend. It is a beautiful day to be a Canadian. We can all exhale.
Yeah, there's a lot of people pretty invested in what was happening on Thursday night. Hey, there were a couple million eyeballs glued to Sportsnet coast to coast for that Four Nations showdown for a tournament that has never happened before and an event that'll never happen again. That final game sure did feel pretty important, didn't it?
You know, that just a kind of a confluence of a number of different things coming together. You know, that was so much more than just a hockey game. And I think that's why, you know, it'll be remembered for so many years and why it was so successful in so many people's eyes and why there was so much emotion last night and leading up to it and in the week leading up to the final. You know, the political situation took that tournament to a whole new level. Would you agree? I mean, this wasn't just about hockey anymore. Like, you know, it almost harkened back to the 72 series. Not that I remember that one, but
I do.
You were there. You were sitting with Eagleson, I think. but, you know, that it was about so much more than just a tournament or a title. There were political, you know, things at play, and no more so in this generation than what happened last night. And, you know, it's funny, I was thinking about it today, and if that had gone the way I kind of feared for months that it was going to go and the Americans were going to win, because I think we all agree that on paper they probably had the most stunning team at the tournament from top to bottom, but we had the three best players in the world and we got a shocking goaltending performance that kind of was the difference in the end. But you know, had we lost last night, and I could say we because it's our country, I honestly was going to tell you today I don't want to talk about it. Like, we would talk about the Flames and nothing but the Flames.
Yeah.
But because we won and everybody could exhale, it's something we can celebrate and we are talking about. But I wonder if I'm alone in that. If Canada had lost, especially in heartbreaking overtime fashion, you know, I wonder how many people would be like me and just say, I don't even know what you're talking about. You know, half jokingly, I don't even know what you're talking about. I didn't watch the game. The tournament was a bad idea. You know, listen, I'm a huge, and it's because I was there in 87 when Mary Lemieux scored that goal. I was 17 years old. I was like, that was one of the most incredible moments of my young life at the time. To win that series against the Soviets. Like, these tournaments are not kitschy. These are not money grabs. These are important. Like, I was stunned, Pat, stunned, when people were asking me at a Super Bowl party just days before I left, because I went and attended the tournament with my son. That's how much I knew this tournament was going to be incredible. You know, these things, I was just stunned at how many people wondered if it was going to be just a bit of a skate in the park and a glorified shinny game and everybody makes money. It played out in that regard. It played out exactly the way I thought, but the way the political tension has grown over the last month or so, it took it to a whole new level. And, you know, it's such that now I see people are just ripping into Gretzky because he didn't acknowledge the Canadian team, or he didn't wear a Canadian jersey or hat, or like, I think it got that crazy that we're ripping into one of the most beloved Canadians of all time for semantics. Like, he didn't acknowledge the Canadian team, but he acknowledged the American team. Well, that was because the carpet that was laid out to his path to center ice was by the American bench. Like, that wasn't a slight to Canada. Yes, I know he lives in the States. Yes, I know he was spotted at Mar-a-Lago with Trump. But my God, like, you know, that's just how heated it got. And I have to tell you, I was at that first game in Montreal with my son and my best friend and his son, and it was such an incredible trip. I'm so glad I took my son. He had the trip of a life. He just loved it. And, you know, when Mara Lemieux came out, it was like, oh, wow, nice, good pull right there. A Montreal legend who's rarely seen coming out. That was incredible. I knew that they were going to boo the anthem. I don't think many people doubted it. And I have no problem with it. You know, I had a long talk with Lomberg about it and how he really hates it because he thinks it's disrespectful to the veterans who fought for our freedoms. And, you know, the U.S. anthem and the Canadian anthem, that's not about the veterans. Sure, it's important to veterans and all that, but I was okay with them booing it because that's the one outlet that a bunch of 18 to 35-year-old dudes with a ton of booze in them and Red Bull have a chance to kind of say their piece. And that's the way they did it. And we as a country are being bullied and pushed around and disrespected at every turn by this idiot. And I think it's great that people are pushing back. And I think that I have no problem. I didn't boo it myself. I just wouldn't have felt comfortable booing a national anthem.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, like, and you can just hear it when I talk about it now, just the fury that a lot of Canadians feel, that I feel, is shared from coast to coast at the incredible disrespect and ignorance being thrown our way. And just you and I and Wes had a very interesting conversation today about our recent trips out of the country and just anecdotal exchanges with Americans who say things and don't have a clue how ignorant they sound. And they don't even mean it, I don't think, in all three of our stories that we shared. They just say, oh, 51st state. You know, like, that makes blood boil in our country, and it should. And I'm glad that in your story, my story, and Wes's story, we all pushed back and told the Americans very politely, because we're Canadians, that they're out of line and what they said is ignorant and not true. So anyway, I get charged up talking about it. I'm glad we could talk about it because it went our way. Had we lost, boy, oh boy. I just kept picturing the tweet from that idiot across the border there and how he would have rubbed that in and been so classless. And I still pictured the tweet coming out this morning from him. I was expecting him to say it was rigged because everything's rigged if it doesn't go his way. But anyway, we won. And I'm not a big Trudeau supporter. You know, again, we're getting way into politics today, but I think we all kind of waded into it over the last couple of weeks. He had actually something I actually agreed with what he said, which is you can't take our country and you can't take our game. Oh, that was well put. I don't know who told him how to write that. I don't know which one of his advisors told him to write that, but well done.
Well,
I like that.
The whole thing's hilarious because, like, I know you very, very well off the air. Like, you know, I know you very well. So I know where you stand on a lot of things politically. And so, like, all of a sudden, I know it because I see it on our text line. We've seen it since the first hour where, you know, Wes had the gall to mention it for, like, a passing, glancing comment. And all of a sudden, it started, like, how dare you talk about politics on your show? Like, we're not bringing this up because we're reading between the lines. The political overtones of Thursday night were so on the nose that, like, you had to be living under a rock with earmuffs and blinders on to not feel the political tension. That's all that Thursday, like, that made Thursday from a game between the Canadians and the Americans into everybody's watching, and it felt like an Olympic gold medal game. It felt like a game 7 of a Stanley Cup final on February 20th. Like, when does that ever happen? And that was because, so, you know, Eric Francis isn't bringing politics onto Flames Talk. Neither was Wes last hour. Neither am I. But when all of a sudden Bill Guerin's going on Fox News inviting the president who's openly talking about annexing a country, whether it's going to happen or not, it's insulting to a lot of Canadians. And maybe it's not insulting to every Canadian. I don't care. It's insulting to Eric. It's insulting to me. It's insulting to a vast, vast majority of Canadians. And so when you've got an opportunity to have a showdown of a sport that we consider part of our national identity in this political climate, you're damn right it's going to feel like more than a hockey game. And it absolutely did feel like that on Thursday night. And I'm so glad that it ended the way that it did. And I'm so glad that the right team won for this side of the border. And it was nice to see Noah Hanifin and Adam Fox take an overtime minus on the game winning goal. I thought I loved it. I was and all I could think about, I haven't been that invested in a hockey game in probably not since the 2010 gold medal game in Vancouver.
Yeah, me too.
Have I been that invested in a hockey game? And that's partially because we're desensitized and it's our job and all that type of stuff. But that, I think, is a really good. You've seen thousands of hockey games. You've covered some of the biggest events. And sometimes, unfortunately, the job that we do maybe desensitizes us a little bit to, you know, what being a fan is like. And we openly accept that. But, like, you were dialed. I was dialed. Everybody was so into that game. And, I couldn't stop thinking about Peter Laborius and his famous quote of going to polish your silver medal. And I have never felt more like, yeah, go polish second place. And I can't wait to see what happens in a year's time at the Olympics, right?
And it's only going to be heightened. Listen, there was a great column in the USA Today about the booing, the Canadians booing the anthem. And it was an American columnist, and she basically was saying, you're damn right they're booing it, and here's why. Because, of course, most Americans don't understand it. They don't care. And she explained it. And guess what? If you're an American athlete, you're going to get the crap booed out of you for the next 4 years. I guarantee it. Like, the Olympics is going to be a bloodbath. Like, I'm telling you, the disrespect that American athletes are going to get shown at every international stage moving forward with this clown affecting the world the way he is, it's just going to get worse and worse for these American athletes. And they'll respond with chants of USA, USA, which has got to be the most annoying chant in the world. And listen, I got to preface all this. My mother's American. For a long time, I held a U.S. passport, too. Yeah. Like, and I travel down there all the time. This is not about the American people. And that's what the booing. If the booing wasn't about the American people, it was about one person. I'm biting my tongue here, right? But, it just reached a boiling point. And to tell you, like, I went from Montreal those first two games with my son. And then we went and met the rest of my family in Mexico. And we watched the game in a sports bar in Puerto Vallarta. And the whole bar was full of Canadians. And then when the Americans scored at one point, it was pretty clear that we didn't realize there were so many Americans in our midst, too. And there was a table of about 20 American dudes at the back. And the way they said, were cheering and celebrating. And hey, totally within their rights. They were being respectful, but they were, many people left and went and watched it in their rooms because they didn't want to be around that. And especially when it was clear that the Canadians were going to lose, like, I definitely couldn't be around that. So it was tough. But even, here we were in what's supposed to be a neutral site to watch the game in Mexico. And I ran into another person and his wife, and they were leaving at the same time we were. And the gentleman recognized me, and I kind of recognized him too. Anyway, it was Lee Richardson, who was a longtime member of parliament representing Calgary. He's retired now, and he spent some time down in Mexico. And I just thought it was so funny that we were walking out to get, like, we just didn't really want any part of the American fans, and because the political situation was getting so much. So anyway, I'm glad that the tournament's over. because it was a very stressful time, right?
Right.
We could go back to, you know, still being angry at different things that are happening politically and all that, but it doesn't affect our game. We could still now go to our game to get away from politics. You know, I thought you said it very well right up, you know, just now about you couldn't help. This was a clash between politics and sports that generally we all try to avoid, and we don't really want it. We like to go to sports to get away from politics, but
right.
But you're right. You could not dismiss this moment in time where the two were clashing. And so I know it was a stressful time. I know my wife couldn't watch the game. She found it so hard to watch. And then when my son and I exploded in celebration over the McDavid goal, she came running down, and it was I could see the relief on her face. And I think that was mirrored across the country from coast to coast. People were so relieved that this exercise was over, because it was about so much more than a game.
Well, and you know, to bring it back a little bit to sports, but like it really was the combination of so many different things. So this is the first time that we've had best on best hockey since arguably 2016, but I would suggest 2014, because 2016 you had a bunch of made up teams. And I know Russia and Czechia and a few other teams, like we didn't see Drysdale. Like they're not everybody was represented at the Four Nations, but this is the closest thing to best on best that we've had in the better part of a decade. So you have got scores of players who have not been able to truly represent their country in something like this in their NHL careers, from McDavid to MacKinnon to Makar to Matthews, Eichel, the Tkachuks. Like, these guys have never had this opportunity before. World championships aren't the same. The World Cup of Hockey in 2016, where they were wearing a gray NHL jersey or North America jersey, it's not the same, right? This was different. So I think the intensity level, like, when you brought up the, even going back a number of weeks ago, I remember we talked about this. I was sitting in the very same chair and we were talking about this, and you said, you know, like, anybody who thinks this is going to be a glorified all-star game is wrong. And you were bang on and correct about it. But like, I think that we would have seen a high level of intensity and a high level of compete to begin with. Like, hell, there's no, right now, Canada, Sweden isn't a big political rivalry, but that game was really damn good. And so was Canada, Finland. That game ended up having a lot of intensity, and especially got a little hairy there at the end. So I think that we would have had a lot of intensity in high-level hockey to begin with, because this is the first time for so many players where they've gotten this opportunity. Two, you've got the Olympic implications, and a lot of players are trying to make an impression on their respective federations to be on the Olympic squad in a year's time. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, added to the intensity and what we saw. And then you throw in a political powder keg on top of it, and it turned into lightning in a bottle for this event that has never happened before and will never happen again. And yet nobody is going to forget that Thursday night or that Saturday night between those two countries for a long, long time. And it just all came together to form some pretty incredible theater on a Thursday night. Hey,
oh, just incredible. What a gift, for, you know, because of the way it turned out, we can call it a gift. And you know, I want to go back just a little bit. Like, I'm sure a lot of Canadians, or Calgarians in particular, when they saw, you know, Noah Hanifin's, you know, suggesting he wanted to win it for America and for Trump, I think that caught a lot of people off guard. It certainly caught me a little bit off guard. I almost always considered him like an honorary Canadian. I don't know why. And I thought that was like that's something Calgarians are going to remember, that he said that. And certainly from coast to coast, people remember all the different players who, you know, said kind words about Trump calling and all this, and that they were going to win it for him and for the country and all. The Tkachuks, I am not surprised that one of the biggest takeaways from the tournament is that the tournament was basically hijacked by the Tkachuks. Like, and that almost sounds negative. I mean it in a positive way. Like, that they, those two dominated this tournament on the ice with their fighting, with the hype leading up to it, the fact that they're brothers, like that stunt they pulled on Saturday. And I, you know, with Matthew fighting right off the hop and then brother following up, that was a gift to the tournament too. Like, I've always said about Matthew Tkachuk and Brady to a somewhat lesser extent, these guys get it more than anybody else in the league. I really believe that. I believe that they just get it more than anybody else because they understand it's a blend of entertainment. It's all about entertainment, really. Yeah. And these guys entertain. And I'm sure many more people in Canada just can't stand those guys more so than before. But we actually owe them a little tip of the cap for what they did to even increase the intensity and the hype leading into it, and then living up to the hype with the fights, and then the way Brady played last night. And it must, you know, we're going to go to Florida next week. I can't wait to talk to Matthew and see how devastating it was for him to sit on that bench and not be able to help out. Like, that must have been the hardest 60 minutes of his life. So I just almost want to say a tip of the cap to the Tkachuks for what they did. It's funny. I ran into, and that might not be a popular take because so many people just hated them for what they did.
But it's true, man. Like
But it's true. You have to recognize it.
Matthew's the ultimate puppet master, and he orchestrated that whole thing, and you know it.
Absolutely. And at the time, I'm sure it was infuriating. But I guess knowing Matthew, and we know his act here in Calgary, and like the things he single-handedly brought back the Battle of Alberta. I mean, you got to give him credit for that too, right? Like, these are things that don't happen without a Matthew Tkachuk and Brady in this case too. So I ran in. I was staying at the same hotel as all the families, the McCars, and you're running into everybody at the hotel. And I ran into Chantel and Keith Tkachuk like several times.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, look, this was before the first game. And they said that, I said, is there any chance they're going to be on the same line together? They said, no, like at the start of the tournament, they're starting off on different lines, as we all saw. She said, but right now Matthew's on the first power play and Brady's on the second power play. And the joke in our family, Matthew keeps telling Brady, he's never going to come off. He's not going to come off because he wants to ruin Brady's tournament and make sure that he gets all the glory. Well, how great that the U.S. team quickly moved those two guys onto a line, which is, again, what I think the hockey world wanted to see. I know the brothers wanted it. The family wanted it. I think it's better for hockey. So, and then what ensued was absolutely calamitous and fantastic. Like, I'm sure it infuriated people, but it also got people so jacked up. Like, you tell me the last time people were so shocked, excited about something that happened it was a meaningful game, but that stole the show, right? No matter what the score of that game was, everybody was talking about the fights the next day.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I bet they planned that months ago. I pictured them literally playing hoops last summer in St. Louis and going, you know what would be fun? When we play Canada at that Four Nations tournament, why don't we just scrap right off the puck drop? And then the guy's like, yeah, and then I'll fight next. I can almost picture it.
How jacked up are you now for the Olympics?
Oh, you're right. It sets the table for, you know, we were all jacked up about the Olympics, you know, again, anyway. But yeah, this just sets the tone. But again, for me, as someone who's feared for a couple decades now, that the inevitable day in my mind when America does assert itself, you know, as the king of international hockey. I mean, they've been catching up with us for years and years and years. I thought this was the time, and I know they won that World Cup back in, what, 96 or whatever, but,
yep.
You know, and I remember that quite vividly, but, you know, I've just feared that day's coming. I mean, it's just a numbers game, right? They have so many more people playing in the States, and they've got all our best coaches and everything, and, you know, I'm just so glad it got staved off again. So my concern going into that tournament will again be, oh no. Like, I almost go into these tournaments now just with fear, not excitement. But I'll try to temper that and just enjoy the ride next year. And I do plan on being there. I plan on being at the Olympics next year. Like, sitting in Montreal at Bell Center, watching those first couple games, I turned to my son. I said, we got to go to the Olympics. And he's like, yeah, you're damn right we do, Dad. So, yeah, I plan on being there as well. You're right. You, this sets that up perfectly.
You, it is true, man. Like, as much as you know, the game on Thursday night meant so much, and we're all happy Canada won, all that type of stuff. I mean, right now the team that scares you the most, we don't know if Russia is going to be involved in the Olympics or not. The team that scares you most right now is that American side, and you know they are the goaltending superpower in the NHL right now. Their elite talent may not, like, if you're talking McDavid, Makar, McKinnon, and the high-end talent Canada has, maybe not quite at the same level with Matthews and Eichel and Hughes, but pretty damn close. Kachuk, obviously, it's pretty damn close. I mean, inevitably, it feels like at some point, Canada and the United States in Milan, Italy, will be for, if it's not all the marbles, then a big chunk of the marbles. And whether it's for a berth in the gold medal game or the gold medal game itself, it kind of feels like they're on a collision course again, hey?
You know, yes, I'll say that. I mean, it feels like it's going to be that way for the next couple decades. But things change. Listen, Sweden had a hell of a team. We haven't seen Russia for a lot of years. I don't know what they'll look like the next time they assemble. But... you know, and Chechia, they're all, there's so many good contenders, but yeah, the two are kind of heads and tails above the rest. Have got to be the North Americans. But a buddy of mine, Todd Oliphant, had kind of thrown out a theory. He says, if the Americans bring the same team to the Olympics, they'll get slaughtered. And I don't necessarily agree with him, but his point is, if you go in there and try to goon it up and you know, little cheap shots here, there, and everywhere, and all that stuff after the whistle, that won't stand in international hockey. It will depend on the officiating, right? If it's kind of NHL officials that are kind of running it, then nothing's going to change. But he's saying on that big ice, you know, it does change things a little bit, right? I mean, teams are going to be built a little differently. Like this year, I don't think anybody can dispute the fact that it was probably a big mistake that they didn't bring Tom Wilson. I kept thinking about that through the tournament, especially when that bloodbath happened against the Americans. Like,
yeah,
that would have ended pretty quickly with Tom Wilson on the ice. It might not have even started, to be honest, but who knows? And you know, to have him in the lineup instead of Seth Jarvis would have been a lot different, right, if you ask me. So the teams will be constructed a little different. There'll be injuries. All sorts of different things are going to happen. And we'll be having the national debate once again as to who should be on the team, who isn't on the team, and how the game might change now that it's in Olympic hands as opposed to basically the NHL's hands. These are all very interesting things that we'll be looking at as we move forward.
It's the Eric Francis Hour. Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca with us. It's Flames Talk. My name is Pat Steinberg. On this Friday, lots still to get to on the Eric Francis Hour as the stretch drive now begins. Four Nations is done, and now back to the resumption of the NHL schedule. And for the Flames, that starts on Sunday against San Jose, and then six straight on the road and an absolute gauntlet. So what does this next seven-game stretch, exactly 2 weeks from the trade deadline, mean from the Flames? That's all as we continue on the Eric Francis Hour. We're coming at you on this Friday from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And now more controversial opinions from Eric Francis on the Flames and San Jose Sharks. I know you've got some hot takes on that huge showdown on Sunday, which I think Francis will feel just as big as Thursday night. Flames and Sharks on Sunday. Telling me that doesn't feel the same as what Thursday's game was?
Yeah. There might be a little bit of a there's an adjustment period, but it will be interesting to see the players that played in the tournament. And look, a lot of them, I'm sure, will be given the weekend off at the very least who were in the final. But I'll be interested to see. I think some of them could just continue, you know, just dominate. You know, if they played that hard and that well against the best, they come back to the NHL. I could, you know, there's quite a lot of momentum there, I would think. Unless you're a Kachuk, I think both those guys are so banged up. Boy, that's going to take a toll on those guys for the next little while, I think.
Sunday, all joking aside, from a Calgary Flames standpoint, feels like a really important game because then you've got a six-game gauntlet road trip that starts immediately following, and that takes you through some very difficult spots, a ton of travel, and it's the six games, well, starting on Sunday, the seven games that leads the Flames into the trade deadline, which is exactly 2 weeks from when we're talking right now. I guess it's a pretty daunting stretch, and the implications of these next seven games, one at home, which it almost feels like you got to have those 2 points against San Jose in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah,
and then see what happens on the road trip. But boy, like these next seven games, these next 14 points on the table for the Flames feel like it could dictate a lot, dictate perhaps some of what Craig Conroy is thinking going into the trade deadline, dictate a lot in terms of what the final 20 games of the season looks like and what type of fight they're going to be in. Like this could be a really crucial next couple of weeks, my friend.
Oh, yeah. Well, when there's only 27 games left and you're in a race this tight, obviously all these games are crucial. Like I hate the word must win, especially when there's 27 games left, but we're almost entering that territory where when you do have an opponent that's, you know, the free spot on the bingo card, theoretically, you better take advantage of it, because we've seen in this city for so many years, Chicago's had Calgary's number and beaten them at some crucial times when Calgary really needed the win. And, you know, Calgary's done a good job playing against those lesser teams this year, I think.
Very good.
But still, you know, you can't take any of those for granted, especially given the road trip that you're talking about here. Like, you could look at pretty much five of those teams of the six as a team that you could almost envision being in the Stanley Cup final. And that's pretty daunting, especially to play in their building. So, yeah, I think I asked the coach about it today. He didn't want to look past the first game, which is, you know, I think symbolic of the way he wants his players to feel.
Yep.
But talking to Dustin Wolf and some of these guys about it, like it's a gauntlet for sure. Nazem Kadri, you know, it will in large part dictate whether or not this team can make the playoffs or not. And like you said, it'll dictate a little bit, you know, how they proceed going into the trade deadline. Unless they get absolutely destroyed and only win one or two games, I really don't think it alters the plans too much. But it does. It would be wrong to suggest that the plan is set in place and it's not going to be deviated from, no matter whether they win six games on this road trip or lose all six. Right? I mean, it does have an impact on how they proceed. And I'm fascinated to see how they fare in these cities, because look, Pat, the last five games in my mind that they've played against a juggernaut,
mm-hmm.
they lost four of them. I don't want to use the word significantly, but they were definitely outclassed in four of them. They had that one win where they stole it in Winnipeg, largely due to the brilliance of Dustin Wolf.
Yep.
But other than that, the other four, and you correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I thought they were significantly outclassed by the Washingtons, the Toronto Maple Leafs, then Winnipeg came back in, and like
Colorado, those games,
regardless of the score, were not that close to me. Do you agree, or do you think
I generally agree. I think that they have, yeah. in recently in games against some of the heavy hitters, have not been able to be at the level that they would like. And I think having Ball back will help. I think having Zeri back will help. But I think that's a very, very fair comment that when they've recently gone up against more heavy hitter teams and teams that you legitimately look at as hey, you know, these guys are going to be in the playoffs. They've had their struggles against them for sure.
Yeah. So now they go into a tougher arena to play in.
Oh, we were doing so well before the technology crapped out on us. We'll get Eric Francis back hooked up in just a second and continue along, because I do think the interesting part of the trade deadline side of things is, and I'm curious if Francis will be on the same page as me, I don't think anything that happens between now and March 7th is going to alter their plans where all of a sudden they're like, oh, we're going big game hunting and we're full-time, we're in buying mode. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. I think the plan continues to be stuck to in that regard, in that if something makes sense for our age range, then sure, we'll do it. But otherwise, you know, we're not going to be deviating from our mindset. However, I do wonder, and again, as I said this last hour, I don't see them just the way this season has gone, how hard this group plays. I don't see this team at any point falling so dramatically out of it that this comes into play, but it's not completely out of the question, I guess. And so I wonder if this team does, because of a rough road trip, maybe they do fall whatever it is, 5-6 points out of a playoff spot. If that happens, does it all of a sudden alter Craig Conroy's plans, and or would players that he has not had on the table before be on the table more so in that regard? What's our status on reconnecting with Eric here, guys?
He's not answering his phone right now, so we are working diligently to acquire Francis again.
Okay, well, that's that makes it hard if he's not picking up his phone. Yeah. And he's lost connection elsewhere. That makes it a little bit difficult to continue the Eric Francis Hour, as we do continue here on Flames Talk on Sportsnet 960 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts. And look, I don't think that all of a sudden, if they are a little further back of a playoff spot, that means that, oh, no, fire sale, Kadri's out, and Rasmus, you're out, and you know what? Let's trade Coleman and Huberdeau as well. Like, I'm not suggesting that, but I do think that there's been a lot of hanging up phones or thanks or no thanks for certain players that have been asked about, because the Flames have been as competitive as they've been and have been in the playoff picture to the extent they've been. If all of a sudden they fall back, we have Eric Francis back with us now. If all of a sudden they fall back, I do wonder if that changes. I'm curious as to where you'd be on that front, Francis, in that if all of a sudden, and I don't see this happening because they have been such a competitive team all year, but like, if this trip goes bad through the first four or five, and all of a sudden now they're 5-6 points back of a playoff spot, would that open the door a little bit more for Craig Conroy to entertain conversations about certain players he hasn't been entertaining before? I'm not suggesting he goes into full fire sale mode, because I don't see that happening. But, you know, if somebody calls and is talking about somebody else that has maybe not been on the table before, I wonder if that does change the approach a little bit in terms of how Conroy navigates some of those conversations.
Yeah, possibly. Like, I think he's done a good job sticking with his blueprint and not deviating from it. Like, I'm only acquiring players that are helping us, you know, now, but all, more importantly, into the future. And it's players that are young and that can grow with us, and we have control of their contracts. But yeah, I could see if things go sideways, him deciding to just cash in and just grab a few more draft pick, you know, lottery tickets, as I call all of them, but you know, draft picks, and proceeds that way. I think he's got a plan A and a plan B in his mind, and that with every game, win or lose, that plan will become more and more clear to him. And I think it also opens up the door, if they win a bunch of these games or lose a bunch, it also opens up the door for different teams to call or not call with inquiries in terms of who might be available. So, you know, like I the one guy, you know, I think everybody assumed all year long that Dan Vladar at some point would get traded, but there's just no market there for him. But, you know, if you could snag a fourth rounder, which is about the best you're going to get for him, you'd consider it, I think, if your team falls out of the picture. Like, it's a no-brainer if your team falls out of the picture. If you're still in the race, I wonder, because you're, you know, that's asking a lot of a guy who's played, what, how many games has Devin Cooley played? Six in the NHL?
Six NHL games, yeah.
Yeah, you know, that'd be a lot to ask for him to play in a playoff game if it were to come to that, or to play in a, you know, must-win game down the stretch. So I don't think you want to put your team in that situation. So, yeah, I think things can change. I originally thought that it wouldn't change at all, but I could see it changing for sure, especially if things go really sideways.
In saying that, do you see them going really sideways? That every time, and we've talked about this before, every time the Flames feel like maybe they're dead and buried, they come right back and they get themselves right back to where they were, close to where they were. And yes, they're in the least advantageous spot that they've been in this season, being 3 points out with even games played. Like, this is the least rosy spot they've been in all year. But I still don't know if I at any point see this group falling completely out of it. And especially now they've made the trade and gotten better with Farabee and Frost, and especially now that they're getting Zarian Ball back, it doesn't feel like a team that's bad enough that does, you know, that scenario that I bring up, it doesn't feel like they're a team that at any point is that bad that they fall completely out of it in a stretch of 5 or 6 games.
No, I you know, I think they've earned my respect to the point where I wouldn't sit here and say that I don't think they could do it. Now, the bad taste that was left in a lot of fans' mouths with that last loss and that last stretch of games where they were, you know, badly outclassed by the Colorados and Torontos, Washington, and then just gave that game away at the end just before the break in a game that should have been an easy win. That makes it hard for people to come out of this break with as much optimism as maybe you'd hope they would have. But you're right. That's 4 new players basically that they have in the lineup moving forward. It's a tight team. They work hard. You know, only one player was at the Four Nations, so fatigue's not going to be an issue. Everybody's jacked up. But, you know, but that said, man, they're facing some juggernauts.
They are,
listen,
for sure.
The one thing that was fascinating to me was, just before the break, I looked at it, and my numbers may be a bit off here, but, you know, Team Tank has been saying all year long they want them to finish bottom 10 in the National Hockey League. I may be wrong on these numbers, but I think I got it. They're only 5 points up. If they drop 5 points, they could drop 7 spots. Like, they're only 5 points up on 7 teams.
Yeah.
And if they lost that 5-point cushion, they could be in the bottom 10. And yet, they're only 3 points out of, or well, I guess 4, to make the playoffs. Like, this could literally go either way. And, you know, I think the biggest fear everyone's going to have is that it's going to go exactly the way it's gone, and it's going to finish right in the mucky middle, and they won't finish bottom 10.
They're going to go 3-1 on this trip.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is exactly what everyone's feared all year long as the worst case scenario. Well, We'll see. You know, it's not necessarily the worst case scenario, because what they're building is an incredible culture here right now. You know, that's been the one thing for Team Tank that they always forget, that if you build a culture of losing and you're okay with that for a number of years, how do you flip the switch? It's hard to flip that switch and start building a culture of winning.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a pretty healthy culture here right now. I know that they're a middling team, but it's a healthy culture. It's moving in the right direction. There's this careful blend of youth and veterans. And, you know, there's something kind of special that's going on in that room, whether they make the playoffs or not this year. And that's something that they can build on moving forward. So even if they do end up in the mushy middle, like everyone says, is the worst case scenario, it's not that bad a scenario, because something pretty cool has been built, and very positive has been built, I think, this season moving forward.
And maybe the last point before we wrap up, but, you know, you asked Ryan Huska the question on Friday morning about Dustin Wolf's workload, and, like, basically, hey, like, how much are you going to manage Wolf's workload, his fatigue? And basically what the coach said is, we're not really worried about that. If we got to play Dustin 15 games in a row because he's the guy that's going, then we'll play him 15 games in a row. That goaltending usage, I don't think that conversation's going away as they enter their final 27-game stretch here.
Yeah, it is. Look, he's going to start a ton of games from now to the end of the year. The guardrails are off. They're not going to monitor his minutes. Like, it's Dustin Wolf's crease. I think he could play 22, 23 games of the last 27, and wouldn't surprise me. And I'm okay with that. I mean, he's been their MVP. I think it's actually encouraging for fans that they're saying this. Look, like, you know, we've sheltered him a lot of the year. We've been very selective of when he starts and when he doesn't. He's never played the second half of back-to-backs. There's only 3 back-to-backs left from now to the end of the year. I think that, you know, this is he can either carry them into the playoffs, and if he doesn't, I'm not sure we can blame him. because it's a Herculean task, really, given the schedule they've got ahead of them. But this is his team, and we've known that for a while. And I thought that was pretty interesting that the coach, you know, blatantly said it. Like, no, no, I'm not worried about fatigue. We need points every time we hit the ice, and Dustin Wolf gives us that chance. Now, I think I have to add, he did say, look, if Dan Vladar goes on a roll, if Dan Vladar goes on a roll, he'll start 15 in a row. I think that's a little bit more, you know, you're paying lip service to a guy who's been a good soldier and who has been very good at times this year for sure. But this is Dustin Wolf's team from now to the end of the year, and we'll be interested. Look, he did it in junior, and he did it in the AHL. He played a ton of minutes. He played back-to-backs. He played a ton of games. I think he can do it. He told me today he certainly feels he can do it. His mom told me he could do it. Mums don't lie.
That's very true.
And so there you go. That's where it's at right now. Dustin Wolf's team from now to the end.
We will see you at practice on Saturday, my friend. Great stuff as always. That was a fun Eric Francis hour. Thank you, pal.
Can we refrain from talking politics now till the end of the year?
Yes, I would love that. Nothing would give me more pleasure than that.
Okay, good. We'll see you tomorrow, bud.
Good stuff. Eric Francis on Twitter, at Eric Francis. That's the Eric Francis Hour as we start to wrap up this hour. Thanks to Cam Hughes and Shan Vergie, our outstanding producers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and the Eric Francis Hour has also been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.